Chapter 10, Awimowa, Awimowa. Weiss, Peretti, and Creatore, The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Stepping out onto the roof of Low Library was a little like stepping onto the Mount Rushmore set of Hitchcock's North by Northwest. The scene where Cary Grant and Eva Marie Saint, pursued by international thugs, are scrambling around on the bald pate of George Washington. A stampede of fast-scudding clouds was racing by overhead, their undersides almost low enough to scrape against the top of the dome. Looking west, I could see over the nearby buildings to the Hudson River. Here and there, breaks in the overcast were allowing diagonal moonbeams like escalators to break through and light up sequined patches on the water below. Over on the Jersey side, I could make out the cliffs of the Palisades. Further north, on our side of the river, the spires of Riverside Church, the tip of Grant's Tomb, and beyond that in the distance, the towers and swooping suspension cables of the George Washington Bridge. The strong wind was plastering the front of my clothing to my chest and fluttering the back of my pant legs. I followed Monica. She had already reached the building's edge and was peering over. As I drew closer, I bent low and then dropped to my hands and knees, crawling the last couple of feet, before lying down beside her. She pointed below. "Is that the spot?" I said. "Yes, that's the spot. As you can see, it's too far out from the side of the building for him to have reached it from up here." Monica swiveled to look behind her. She said, "And if, as you say, he used a rope to rappel down and climb back up again, I don't see anything up here for him to tie off to." I said, "I agree, but look, see? There are a couple of air shafts down there, flush to the ground and up against the side of the building." She said, "But they've got heavy iron bars across them. They're not meant for opening." I said, "I think we should go check them out anyway. Besides, the guard told us to come right back." We backed up on our hands and knees and then stood up. Making our way back to the door, Monica confided, "Wasn't that funny what happened to his pants? Poor guy. I should offer to sew them for him." The panicky guard was relieved when we returned unscathed. He had managed to complete a makeshift repair job. Monica sweetly apologized for causing him to ruin his trousers, and furthermore for slipping out without his permission. Not surprisingly, he forgave her. She begged him one last favor. "Sir, could you take us down to the basement to inspect the air shafts on that side?" Not surprisingly, he agreed to that, too. The first one he led us to was located behind a double-hung window, with both the frame and the window panes painted opaque white. Upon opening, it revealed a 3-foot-tall, dead rubber tree in a flower pot. It was balanced on another overturned flower pot. Craning our necks, we peered upwards and immediately saw that the iron bars of the grating overhead were embedded in immovable slabs of granite. However, the next air shaft we came to proved to be a different story. It was apparent the second we looked inside and saw the built-in iron rungs that formed a ladder to the top. I asked the guard, "Sir, do you mind if I climb up there and take a look?" He replied, "No, hold on, wait a minute. What about fingerprints? You better not." I said, "It's okay, look." I pointed to a talc-like residue still remaining on a few surfaces of the ladder. "Dusting powder, you see? The forensic team is already dusted through here." He assented, so I climbed up. When I reached the grate, I could see that the iron bars this time, instead of being inserted into holes in the granite slabs, were instead welded into a frame that rested on a granite lip. Hanging off the ladder by one hand, I tried lifting the grate. I could barely budge it. It was like trying to bench press a heavy weight using only one arm. However, by climbing a couple rungs higher and placing my shoulders against the bars, this time I was able to raise the grate enough that I could poke my head above ground like a gopher. Straight ahead was a clear path leading to the spot where Beverly Martindale's body had lain. I climbed back down and brushed off my hands. Monica brushed off my shoulders. "That's definitely how he did it," I said. "It would be quite easy to bring a body up this way and not be noticed." The guard said he had to get back to his post and began leading us out. As we passed a door across the hall from the one providing access to the air shaft, Monica tested the knob to see if it was locked. It wasn't. Once again, without seeking permission, she entered. It was nearly pitch dark inside until the guard reached in and found the light switch for her. She gave the same kind of startled reaction most people do when they first see it. We were peering into a large circular room with two long rectangular metal tanks arranged in parallel on foot-high cement pedestals. Each tank was at least 25 feet long and 6 feet wide and was filled with water to the shallow depth of a wading pool. Add lily pads and koi goldfish, and the twin tanks would make a suitable decor for the lobby of a corporate headquarters. In between these tanks, however, mounted on a third pedestal, was an 8-seater racing shell with its 8 long oars swept back in unison and balanced on their oarlocks. The guard explained without her having to ask, "It's for the crew team to practice on during the winter." Monica said, "Seems a funny place to put rowing equipment. Why not put them in the gym?" The guard answered, "Because in the old gym there was no room for it. Back during the 60s, the university was about to build a new gymnasium to house this sort of thing, but the students at the time objected. They objected to the plan to take over a Harlem kids' playground to construct a fancy new gym. Because of their protests, that site was never used, and so the tanks stayed where they are." While the guard had been giving his spiel, Monica had begun descending the circular catwalk. I followed her down. She dipped her fingers into the water to test its temperature, and then walked over to try another door showing up beneath the catwalk at the opposite end of the room. It opened into a long, dark corridor descending at a sloping angle. "Where does this go?" she asked. "Well, practically anywhere you want it to," the guard said. "You're looking at the tunnels."